The Athletic.
If you're not yet a subscriber to The Athletic, now's the time with our best offer ever. Sign up today and you'll pay just £1 a month for the next 6 months, giving you unrivaled insight and analysis of everything Euro 2020 and taking you well into the new Premier League season too. The Athletic is the only place you can read pieces by award-winning writers like Michael Cox, Rafa Honigstein, Amy Lawrence and Daniel Taylor. And when you subscribe, you'll also get ad-free versions of all of The Athletic's podcasts from across its audio network. Head to theathletic.com/totally and become a subscriber today for £6 until the end of the year. That's theathletic.com/totally.
Good afternoon, passengers. This is a pre-boarding announcement for flight 89. Please have your boarding pass and identification ready.
Baku, Sevilla,
Amsterdam,
Glasgow,
München,
Sankt Petersburg,
Bucharest,
Budapest,
Copenhagen,
Roma, London.
Unbelievable! Totally Football Show at the Euros, and we're off. Opening night sees the Italians driving upfield menacingly. Then when they took the ball out of the toy car, they looked even more dangerous, scoring three, carving up Turkey like it was Natale. Next up, day two sees Denmark taking on Finland. Will we see happy Finnish faces in their first ever tournament appearance? Speaking of happy finishes, Juba's Russia face world number one's Belgium. And Bale Claxon as the Swiss face any other home nations that may be competing. It's the Totally Football Show at the Euros in association with Paddy Power. Hurrah, listener. And hello to you. Thank you so much for joining us. With our coverage of the first day of Euro 2020. Did you catch Friday's opening match? Do you have informed views on the opening ceremony? Well, if not, don't worry. Sasha Gurionov and Duncan Alexander are here to help. We've got James Horncastle pitching up very shortly as well. Sasha, hello, good evening.
Hi, James.
Hello, and good evening to you, Duncan Alexander. I say good evening because this is just after the final whistle at the Stadio Olimpico.
Literally moments later, and we're already analysing. Yeah, hello.
And 1 or 2 hours after the rather touching opening ceremony, would you say? There were a couple of glitches when 1984 called and asked for its graphics machine back, and when the Covent Garden Piazza asked for their golden mime statues to be returned. But in all other respects, I thought it was tremendously successful.
Always love a bit of Nessun Dorma. Always love to see fans in the stadium. This tournament finally happening. So I think it was just genuinely heartening to see Stadio Olimpico on our screens with actual football a year late.
Mm.
Do you know the thing that affected me the most was there was a slight sag to the goal nets in the Olimpico, which was very reminiscent of World Cup 1990. And I had a real kind of, you know, sort of flashback just from a slight, you know, wafting of the net. And it was obviously that was the first tournament game played at that stadium since the 1990 World Cup final. And a lot has changed since then. Obviously, Maradona was in that game. He's now essentially a stadium in Italy, isn't he, in some ways? So I know that it's a lot of players and fans don't particularly like that stadium, but it is a very kind of storied place, isn't it? So it's a good place to start a tournament.
Yeah, I would say that it shouldn't work in many ways because of the running track and that, but it really does. I mean, it's a really atmospheric place.
Yeah, it's the least invasive running track in world football, I would posit.
It almost acts as part of just kind of like spreading the, you know, opening it out to the crowd, giving it room for everything to kind of express. Anyway. Lovely stuff. And as you say, Sasha, it's never a problem to hear Nessun Dorma sung so very beautifully by Andrea Bocelli. With in the background, I think it was a reference to La Donna Immobile, the woman pirouetting up into the night sky under the balloons. Anyway, enough about that. Let's get on to the main business of the evening in Rome on Friday, and that was Italy's 3-0 win over Turkey.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power and part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Insigne, 3-0, siamo una macchina da guerra, siamo una macchina da guerra.
Lorenzo il Magnifico, we are a war machine, Fabio Caressa there at Italy's third goal on Friday night. James Horncastle joins us now. James, What an exhilarating evening from the Azzurri.
We are a war machine. A war machine.
Yes.
No, it was a fantastic second half performance in particular from Italy, who'd come up against a Turkey side that what had been touted as one of the unfancied teams that might go quite far in this competition, and they might yet do that. But
back to Turkey.
Certainly. Yeah. Certainly the first hour, that all they did was defend, you know, which considering some of the players that they've got going forward was disappointing. And Italy then cut through them wonderfully in the second half.
It was really disappointing to see a team at the Stadio Olimpico just thinking about defending. I mean, yeah, nobody wants something. But Italy, they got finally the breakthrough after all that domination in the first half through Demiral's own goal. Then they didn't sit back on a one-goal lead. What's going on?
Well, this is Mancini's way, isn't it? I thought the first goal, the change that they made at halftime as well, when they brought on Di Lorenzo for Florenzi, Di Lorenzo, who gave them a little bit more of a burst on the right-hand side. And then, you know, kind of a opening goal made in Sassuolo because I think this is one of the great stories of this national team, or if you want to say the opening night, because Locatelli spreading the play, ending up at Berardi, and Berardi then crossing it to Demiral, who scored the own goal. Demiral, who kind of came to Italy via Sassuolo. So I think that's kind of amazing, really, that a team from a city of, what, 40,000 people, it's not even a city, has been able to have some kind of a contribution like that. But Spinazzola all night was just absolutely rampant. And I think, again, goes to show that when he's fit and healthy, he's got that ability to, well, he's got pace, but he's a guy who plays on the left, who's right-footed, loves nothing more than to cut inside and really go at defenders. And yeah, ultimately, those combinations between him and Insigne told.
Absolutely. Duncan, were you impressed?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, you saw lots of people on social media saying, well, hang on, this isn't the Italy I remember, as if, you know, countries are stuck in, you know, the same way of playing forever. But yeah, they were, it was very much a team performance. And, you know, even the own goal was due to the kind of constant threat that Italy were posing. I mean, I would say the true own goal was Turkey's lack of ambition, really, wasn't it? I mean, they only let in three goals in the whole of qualifying. And then obviously there's this long running stat that Italy had never scored more than two goals in a European Championship game. This was their 39th match. And they finally did it. So
incredible. Other numbers you may enjoy listening include the fact that Italy are now 28 matches in a row unbeaten and 9 consecutive victories, all of them without conceding a single goal. There was one slight moment at the end when you wondered if Turkey were going to interrupt that with a consolation, but they didn't. James, just finally, early stages of this tournament, of course, but Italy very composed on the ball, very, very composed off it.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned that streak of clean sheets that they had. It was kind of fun to see at the end, you know, one of the very few chances that Turkey created. Chiellini getting in the way and celebrating like he'd scored a goal, even though his team was 3-0 up. I mean, I think the combination of Chiellini and Bonucci, who, you know, people keep saying, oh, but they've got Chiellini and Bonucci at the back. It's like two of the best centre-backs of their generation who've got, what, 209 caps between them. I don't see that as a weakness in the slightest. And you've just got that blend. Yeah, this has been consistent with really what we've seen from Mancini for 2 years now, 28 games unbeaten, a new generation that has come through playing this style of football, which, you know, they've been taught coming up through the youth ranks for the national team for the last 10 years. So it's exciting to see that Italy, after trying to play this way under Cesare Prandelli, particularly in 2014, and initially doing very well against England, and maybe that's a bit of a cautionary tale before we get too carried away, in Manaus, and then, you know, that experiment coming to a very quick end with them going out into group stages. I don't think that's going to happen this time, because I just think we've seen this consistent kind of this crescendo, really, under Mancini going into this major tournament.
I mean, Italy are basically through now, aren't they? The way that the groups are structured, a win and three goals is pretty much enough to, you know, start planning the last 16 now. So,
Wembley, here we come.
Well, absolutely. Next up for Italy, it will be Switzerland. Actually, that's coming up next Wednesday at the Stadio Olimpico in Rome again, while Turkey next up face Wales in Baku. James, thank you so much for joining us this evening. We'll catch up with you soon.
Pleasure, guys.
Hey, Sasha, some folks have been talking up Turkey. Sasha, hey?
I wonder who those people are. And some folks have also been saying that, you know, Gunesh would go quite defensive in Rome and will try to catch Italy on the break. Unfortunately, he did the defensive bit and forgot to do the rest of it. I think you could see in the first half that how deep Turkey was sitting. I mean, it was, I think, 6-3-1. Yakuşlu was dropping back, Karaman was dropping back, and eventually they were just squashed by the pressure that I think they invited upon themselves. Italy learned to get around the defence a bit better after half-time. But also, you could see that at 1-0, obviously, Gunesh makes some substitutions to get back into the game. And you could see Barella picking up the ball in a huge amount of space in midfield, where clearly Yakuşlu is gone and there's no structure. And they do whatever they want. And I thought the only really player to come out with any credit tonight was Çakır, the goalkeeper. Yes, I mean, he slightly shanked his clearance for the third. But I thought, you know, he looked athletic. His reactions were excellent. And I think, if anything, he was let down by his more experienced defenders. I thought he had a very, very good game today.
Well, it might have been very pleasant viewing that for Wales, who, as we mentioned, will be facing Turkey next.
I mean, the good thing is it's not over for Turkey. In some situations, they'd be dead and buried now, but they're not. I've still got a really good chance. So, we'll go again.
Again, I mean, from Turkey's point of view, you could look at the last two games. Turkey might not only need to win one, maybe with a decent goal difference, to actually get through. So it's not the end of the world.
Way to ramp up the jeopardy, guys. Excellent. All right. Listener, remember, you can sign up for a subscription with The Athletic for unrivaled coverage of Euro 2020. All the articles, all the podcasts ad-free, and Q&As with writers. It's all for just £1 a month. I mean, I'm laughing. £1 a month for your first 6 months. So head to theathletic.com/totally. You can also download The Radar, which is a comprehensive PDF scouting the players to watch at Euro 2020, including Harry Wilson of Wales. So far, we've had 90 minutes. Saturday brings three more big mashups. We'll talk about them next.
Euros are here, and you'd better make the most of them because they only come around every 4-5 years. So, if your bookie isn't making you feel special, then maybe it's time to find a new one. Yep, not so much carpe diem as carpa diem, yeah? If the grass is greener on the other side, come and play on it. If your bookie's not giving you the best rewards, switch and you'll get a completely free £5 bet builder on all England's group games. Paddy Power.
Pre-match bet builder bets only min 2 plus legs online exclusive. Must have previously deposited to avail. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Listener, it's June the 12th, or thereafter, for you. And on this day in Euro history, well, in Euro 2012, host nation Poland witnessed this extraordinary equaliser by their skipper, Jakub Blaszczykowski, against Russia.
Do niego zagranie na wolne pole, będzie okazja. Piste!
Was it a keenly felt game, that one against Russia, for the host nation? We'll have a listen to the reaction to that goal outside in the fan parks. Sasha, do you remember that goal?
Yeah, I remember there was a massive ride before the game. That's what I remember it for. And also Russia came a cropper because they won the first game 4-1. They drew this one 1-1, and then they lost to Greece going out. So they were very much downward trajectory and hooliganism.
Right. What an unpleasant cocktail. Also, speaking of 1-1s with Poland, and also on this day at Euro 2008, Howard Webb awarded a controversial 90th-minute penalty for co-host Austria, which allowed them to equalise against the Poles. Angry much? Yeah, you're remembering this. Within minutes, websites were listing Webb's home address, telephone number, and even work email address. A very serious business, especially since it was the wrong Howard Webb. This was Howard Webb of Rotherham. Hello to you if you're listening.
Surely the work email address would have given it away. If it wasn't howard.webb at refereespalace.org, then clearly it's not the right man. So
it wasn't the right man. He needed police protection because of the threats made to him. Actual referee Howard Webb wouldn't, because he is police protection.
Yeah, he was a... But was he then, or had he turned professional by that point? As a professional,
possibly
referee?
He had, Duncan, but you know. So anyway, have you ever been mistaken for anyone, Duncan?
No.
All right, man, listen, send in your looky likeness. Sorry, what was that? What was that?
Manuel Almeida on occasion.
Really? Yeah, I can see that. Okay. Well, let's hear what's on the way on this day in 2021. Day two of Euro 2020, and at 2 o'clock, it's the other half of Group A, Wales, Switzerland. Gareth Bale leading the Dragons in their bid to be, well, this year's Wales. At 5, Group B gets underway, and so does Finland's first ever tournament game. It's against Denmark. They're the finish, but how will they start? Then at 8 o'clock, also in Group B, it's Sasha putting the bins out as top-ranked Belgium take on Russia. Are you nervous, Sasha?
No, not at all. I think I don't feel allegiance to like a particular national side in the big tournaments anymore, to be honest. It's kind of dissipated in the years. So yeah, exactly. How convenient, given Russia's performances. Maybe something's got to do with that. But I think, I mean, Russia obviously coming in as a massive underdog into this game, really nothing to lose, low expectations, but not as negative as we had it last time. However, at the World Cup, they did have the benefit of facing possibly the worst team in the group in the first game, whereas this time they have the favourites. I mean, we can see that, you know, Belgium do have missing players like De Bruyne isn't, might even miss two games, I heard, not just the first one. Obviously, Witzel hasn't recovered yet. Hazard is not in a very good state, but I think they should... I mean, what are they going to have? Meunier, Dendonka, Tielemans, Thorgan Hazard across the midfield, Mertens, Lukaku, Carrasco up front. I think Russia are going to be struggling in this one.
Okay. You will have home advantage, but Belgium, on the other hand, have already beaten you 3-1 and 4-1 in the qualifying games for this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, one of those games, famously, I mean, it was De Bruyne who ran the show. And of course, you know, Belgium know St. Petersburg quite well. That's where they beat England, you know, in the third place playoff. And Russia also, I think, see Belgium as a bit of a bogey team over the years. I remember 2002 World Cup, they lost out to them. And of course, Soviet Union's most famous defeat, 1986, last 16, when they lost 4-3. And there was controversy because of possible offside goals and the Russians were furious. And Bilanov scored a hat-trick, but the Soviet team went out. And that was a probably one of the most keenly felt defeats in Soviet football's history. So there's plenty of history there, but I think they're just on different levels, the two sides.
All right, well, we'll see. Duncan, are you looking forward to this one?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see Belgium. I mean, Sasha's mentioned the absences there, but, you know, they've got four players with more than 100 caps. This is arguably one of the most experienced international teams to ever turn up at a tournament. But it reminds me a little bit of England in the 2010 World Cup, where it was such an established set of players, but they had slightly, the golden generation was slightly, you know, tailing off a little bit. And to be fair, I don't think Belgium are going to play like England did at the 2010 World Cup, but they are an experienced team. But sometimes experienced teams can be, you know, run ragged in tournaments. So possibly not Russia, but I think someone in this tournament has definitely got the, you know, the capability of giving Belgium a pretty difficult time.
We shall see. Okay, 8 o'clock this evening. Sasha?
One thing I would add, there is talk in Russia at the moment of playing Kuzayev, Ozdoyev, Zobnin and Golovin, all of whom on paper might end up in central midfield. So if you had 4-2, I mean, of course, I'm being slightly ridiculous here, maybe they're going to try to knock the living daylights out of Dendonker and Tielemans, but I think it's still a very long shot.
Okay, all right. Well, earlier on, also in Group B, there's this Nordic thing between Denmark and Finland, which could be very interesting. Denmark, a lot of people's picks as dark horses, just as Turkey were. While Finland, aka the Eagle Owls, are playing in their very first men's tournament ever. How are they going to do? We caught up with former Finnish football writer of the year, Ari Virtanen of Helsingin Sanomat, at the airport on his way to Copenhagen for the game. Ari, thank you so much for spending your time in between airplane rides with us. A lot of people have made the comparison with Iceland at the last European Championships, who had such an extraordinary run in their first tournament. Can Finland have that kind of a run?
I doubt that. I'm sorry to say, but it's of course possible. There are some factors that remind me of Iceland in this team. For example, a lot of the key players were sent away or were invited to foreign clubs when they were 16, 17, 18 years old. Same as with Iceland team. And then we are also massive underdogs in this tournament. So that reminds of Iceland, of course. But, you know, with this tournament format, it's always possible that Finland can win one game and then we are through to the playoffs.
Absolutely. Finland, after all, a team who last November defeated the world champions France 2-0 in Paris.
That gives a huge amount of self-confidence to the team, and it did give it to the team and to individual players like Marcus Fors of Brentford, who scored in his debut, and also Onni Valakari, who also scored in his debut. He plays in Pafos, by the way.
Excellent. It's a tough start for Finland in this first tournament for Suomi. You've got Denmark in Copenhagen, which you're on your way to right now, Russia in St. Petersburg, and then the world's top-ranked nation, Belgium.
Now that you say it, it seems like an impossible group. Denmark is a fierce opponent, and their attacking game is admirable. And I think on the paper, Russia is the easiest opponent of these three teams.
Okay, and that's in St. Petersburg. Are a lot of Finnish fans going to travel to that?
Yes, there will be a lot of fans, or as much as there can be in these circumstances. At least 2,000 in Parken Stadium in Copenhagen, and maybe more in St. Petersburg, because it's quite close. Of course, the officials and government advise that people shouldn't travel there, but hey, how can people miss this kind of opportunity? It's a once-in-a-lifetime situation for these fans. And who knows, it might be even for the team. So it's a must thing to see. So, of course, people have taken all the precautions and taken the tests and they are careful. So I'm not the one to blame them for traveling there.
Okay, we're 2 or 3 minutes into the interview now, Ari, and we still haven't mentioned Teymour Pukki. So what an extraordinary qualifying campaign he has had. How central is he to what Finland are hoping to be doing in these group games?
Well, absolutely one of the key players. We rely on his counter-attacking skills and his sharp, accurate shots. So, of course, there are good strikers in the team as well. I think we haven't had this kind of a striking power for decades. We have two Premier League goal scorers and also two Bundesliga goal scorers there in the team. So I'm not sure. This might be a unique situation. There was once a time when there were Sefki Kutsi, Mikael Forssell and Jonathan Johansson and also Jari Litmanen in the team. So this is certainly good enough team what comes to attacking. We might be a bit of a short of good enough players in the midfield. The defense is really solid, although the club names of the players don't impress much. But anyways, they play well together.
Ari, you said it's a once-in-a-lifetime chance for the fans and possibly for the team as well, possibly for journalists following Finland as well in this tournament. So how excited are you and what are you most looking forward to seeing?
Oh, well, I'm of course excited. I think I might be a little bit emotional when the game starts in Copenhagen on Saturday evening. But then when the game starts, it's same for me as the players. We have to concentrate on the game and be focused. I just hope that Finland's going to score a few goals and then there's going to be some excitement in the end of the group, maybe in the last game too.
Excellent. All right, Ari, that's brilliant stuff. Have a great trip to Copenhagen and beyond.
Thank you, and thank you for inviting me.
Ari Virtanen there, right, on his way to the big game. The Danes, though, they look like tough opponents. Only one defeat in the last 12 matches. Only three in the last 34 competitive games. Crikey. What do you think, Duncan? What do you think about the Danes? Are they a more likely dark horse than the Turks proved on Friday?
Yeah, I think it's time to get the tarpaulin for the early dark horses and switch to a fresh batch of dark horses. So, yeah, Denmark are a very good team, actually. I mean, this fixture's good. Like, it's the country everyone thinks is in Scandinavia but isn't, against the country everyone doesn't remember is in Scandinavia. Do you know what I mean?
Because Finland actually is in Scandinavia but Denmark isn't?
No, so they're right around.
Denmark is in Scandinavia, but I always assumed they weren't. I never thought Finland were in Scandinavia.
I think that's because you're a very educated man on Baltic, you know.
Right.
Things. But topology, I think a lot of people would... Yeah, I think a lot of people get that mixed up. So,
okay, well, happy to put them right.
Now that we've seen Italy score three and break their, you know, two-goal glass ceiling, the baton sort of passes on to Denmark. They haven't scored more than two in any of their last 22 games at major tournaments. Last did it in 98 against Nigeria. So, again, maybe this is going to be the Euros of teams, you know, getting those monkeys off their back and scoring goals. But... But I just hope for Finland's sake they don't open their first ever tournament match with a thumping.
We did speak about the remarkable Danish spine going into this tournament. Of course, questions over the actual strikers. But I think maybe Jonas Vind, 22, playing at his home ground, FC Copenhagen, obviously play at Parkenstadion. And maybe he can be that extra factor that adds a bit of an extra punch for them up front. But particularly as he is, even though Finns think they have a good defense, I think with Eriksson's passing and a bit of, you know, bit of grit in the Danish midfield, I think they could probably set Wind up on his way to actually cause some trouble for the Finnish defense.
A mighty Wind. All right, excellent. Well, that's Group B anyway. There's another game that takes place on Saturday, and it comes from the other half of Group A. The early kickoff in which Wales will be taking on Switzerland all the way over there in Baku, Azerbaijan. Switzerland, who in the first of our preview shows, which are well worth going back to and enjoying if you haven't already, Tom Williams described Switzerland as being the Mexico of UEFA, because they tend to make it to the finals without really denting the knockout stages. Could this be the year they get it right, though? What do you think?
Is that the dark horse klaxon going off again? Might be.
Well, it is a little bit. So they made the round of 16 under Petkovic in 2016. They then made the final four of the inaugural Nations League, and they've got a pretty interesting set of players.
Yeah, they're an interesting team. I mean, I'm not expecting this game to be a classic, I'll be honest. I mean, they went through their group in 2016, Switzerland, by scoring two goals and letting in one, which is, you know, in three games is not loads of goals. And Wales only scored 10 goals in qualifying. We spoke about Timu Pukki a minute ago, and he scored as many goals in qualifying as Wales did in total. So it's, you know, two teams that will probably, in particularly now, I think this is what's interesting about tournaments as well, is now they've seen Turkey lose to Italy. You know, a draw is not that bad for both these teams. Particularly, you know, Turkey on -3 goal difference now. So even if you lose 2-1, 3-2, probably more likely 1-0, that's not going to be that bad a result when you know what's happened elsewhere. So how will it affect the players?
Well, that remains to be seen. You were enthusing about Denmark, Duncan. Let's just remind ourselves that Switzerland actually topped Group D of Euro qualifying for this tournament ahead of Denmark. So they are better. Sasha.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. And I saw Switzerland play at Euro 2016. I went to Lens to see them play against Albania, which was quite a curious game because the entire Swiss midfield was actually ethnic Albanians. So it was like 16 ethnic Albanians on the pitch. And how Albania could have wished they could have had that midfield, basically, in that game. So I thought Switzerland were comfortably better, but they were not spectacular up top. And I think there was always questions about Seferovic. Basically, whether he is a consistently good high-level striker. I think in 2016, he was sort of struggling for goals, I think, at Eintracht Frankfurt. And I think at Benfica, he's kind of decent every other season. But, like, I look at this game, and as you were talking about the goal differences and stuff, I'm just thinking 0-0. And I think 0-0 would actually suit both teams. But you have to bear in mind that after this game, these two teams then have to play Turkey in Baku. And playing Turkey in Baku will be like playing Turkey away, effectively, because there's going to be vociferous home support for Turkey in Baku. So maybe that might encourage one of them to go for it. Or alternatively, they might think, well, we'll get a 0-0 here. We saw the loss of organization that Turkey suffered today. Turkey would have to come at us, just hit them on the counter.
All right. Wales, who were the fairy tale story of the last Euros, how much of that pixie dust do they still have about them for you, Duncan?
Probably not quite as much. I mean, there's questions about Gareth Bale, about how, you know, can he do what he did 5 years ago, isn't it? And then, yeah, same with, you know, Aaron Ramsey as well. Ramsey was brilliant. I mean, people forget how good he was in the last Euros. He assisted 4 goals in a tournament, which is pretty rare to do. But, yeah, they're organised. I mean, I think a lot of these teams, you can't really kind of, you know, everyone's talking about Turkey and saying, you know, they're dark horses, they're blah, blah, blah. We saw tonight that actually stepping up into a tournament is a different thing. And, you know, maybe one of Wales or Switzerland will panic and turn in a terrible performance. But, yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, one thing I would add as well. So the kickoff is 5:00 Baku time. I think it's going to be high 20s, possibly low 30s out there. Another reason why, I don't expect particularly flowing football from this one.
I see. All right. Well, should you choose to watch it, and I think probably after that opening ceremony and opening game, we're all enthused to see as much of this tournament, which is suddenly happening all around the continent. Caught me a little bit by surprise, I must admit. We all knew Euros were coming, but to suddenly see an international tournament taking place in all its glory was was pretty neat. It kicks off at 2:00, very much UK time, but your listener, you might be somewhere else more exotic. I don't know. Let's get some odds for Saturday from Paddy Power. It's over to producer Ben.
Thank you very much, Jimbo. Well then, listeners, we're back. This is producer Ben, and I am on the line with Jason Murphy from Paddy Power. Jason, I want to look ahead to Saturday's games, please. And with apologies to our Malaysian listeners, because I believe the surname of Timu Pukki from Norwich is a swear word over in Malaysia. I fancy him to have at least one shot on target, or quite literally one shot on target in that game against the Danes. Am I right here?
Yeah, for Pukki to have one shot on target in the match, it's 8-13. What we just, you know, we always want to advise listeners, if you're having a bet with Paddy Power, be informed and think about the angles. It won't be the Pukki that we're used to seeing playing in an Norwich team. Obviously, that's a 4-2-3-1, but for Finland, it's likely going to be a 5-3-2, and he'll have to share some of those shots out. Plus, he's not going to have Bundia supporting him either, putting him on a plate. So just keep that in mind. But Pukki, one shot on target, it's 8-13. And yeah, there'll be plenty of Finnish people swearing it if it hits the back of the net, if he does get one.
Okay, and finally, you guys are all about the bet builders for the Euros. Now, for those people who don't know, a bet builder is pretty much like an acca, but on a single game. Wales versus Switzerland, what I'm focusing on. And for this, my bet builder, please, is a goal for Gareth Bale, a yellow card for Aaron Ramsey, and four shots on target for the Swiss. What kind of numbers do I get for that?
Yeah, so the goal for Gareth Bale is going to be popular with anyone doing a bet builder. He's 13-5 to score any time in this match. The yellow for Ramsey is interesting. As a single, it's 10-3 for it to occur. Looking at his career, he picks up a yellow card about one in every seven games. So it depends on where he's positioned in this Welsh team. Wales have a lot of good of attacking options, so I think Ramsey could be actually playing a bit more central, sitting back and more likely to pick up that yellow. So it's a great angle. And then Switzerland, just to have four shots in the game. Not four shots on target, just four shots in the game, because you know Xhaka might be hitting a few of them, could be a few Hail Marys in there. That's 3-10. So you put those three legs in for this match and it comes up just shy of 25-1. But you can do your own bet builder. You might like those angles, you might not, but that's the great thing about it. Whatever you fancy, you can do and get a bit of entertainment watching the game.
The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power. Place a 4+ fold bet builder on any football match and get money back as a free bet if one leg lets you down. Check paddypower.com for more details.
£10 max free bet. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman, host of The England Show, brought to you daily throughout Euro 2020. I'll be joined by writers from The Athletic and special guests to bring you unrivaled coverage dedicated to the England team this summer. So for expert insight into Southgate's squad and post-game reaction to all the games, search for The England Show wherever you get your podcasts or via The Athletic app.
We're all driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. According to their own survey, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. Remember the last time you were hiring and how slow and overwhelming it was? Well, you don't need to go through all that again. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent. And because you listen to the Totally Football Show, Indeed is going to give you a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/totally. That's Indeed.com/totally. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed at Indeed.com.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Sasha!
I was just going to mention something about Baku and today's Wales-Switzerland game. One person who was supposed to be there commentating on the game was Match TV's Mikhail Masakovsky. He turned up at Baku Airport, was stopped and turned around and put on the plane back to Moscow. Reasons for this given as other reasons. Well, he suspects what actually happened was this was because of his visit to Nagorno-Karabakh, the disputed territory between Armenia and Azerbaijan, Azeri territory, technically. And he played in a football tournament there in 2009. And this is off the back of a major sort of diplomatic incident, as it became this week, when Nobel Arustamyan, who was born in Baku but also visited Karabakh, and he also works for Match TV, his accreditation actually got refused by UEFA, and it actually got raised to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and, you know, the spokesperson, Maria Zakharova, got involved. So he got his accreditation for the tournament eventually. Mikhail Mosakovsky got his accreditation up front, and then he got turned around at the airport. His colleague, Konstantin Genich, got a call from someone, you know, reminding him of his visit to Nagorno-Karabakh in 2009, which again, by Azerbaijan law, is illegal. And then he got knocked back by UEFA as well. So it's a bit of a diplomatic incident, I think, going on there with accreditations for this tournament. At the same time, Robert Kempe from ARD got knocked back from visiting St. Petersburg because he has been talking extensively about the relationship between Gazprom and UEFA. It's interesting. What is interesting, I think, I find with this, apart obviously from all the issues for fellow journalists and commentators, is hosting a tournament across 11 nations, there would be certain difficulties which might not arise against one nation because there might be grievances or disputes or someone misstepped somewhere amongst these 11 countries. And this one of these countries wouldn't have a veto on the UEFA accreditation. So we'll see what anything else is going to come up. But at the moment, Baku is not very popular amongst Russian TV workers, let's say.
So these are their accreditations for all of the Euro 2020s or just for games in Baku? Yeah.
For the whole tournament, you need an approval from everybody. And for example, for Nobel Arustamyan, he got a letter which basically said this is on advice of the local, local security services. So obviously they were aware of his visit to Nagorno-Karabakh, and you know he didn't really hide it in the past. And under Azeri law, from what I understand, you need a special permission. And obviously if you go from the Armenian side, you enter this territory without permission. So it's a long-term conflict. Obviously, as you know, there was a war in 2020 whereby Azerbaijan recaptured a lot of that land. And then afterwards, there was a joint Turkish-Azeri military parade in Baku to celebrate their victory. Erdogan was there with Aliyev, the two presidents. So I think there's another reason, like sort of demonstration of the fact, you know, Turkey and Azerbaijan are very close allies. And this is another reason why Turkey will have great support in Baku.
Maybe the next time they hold a European Championships like this spread out across the continent, it will be a similar situation between England and Scotland. And they'll be, you know, you cross the Hadrian's Wall and it'll...
Hadrian's Wall, at your peril. Yes. Why did you go to Edinburgh in 2018?
Yeah.
That's an extraordinary business, though, Sasha. Reading it, I'd assumed that it was accreditation for Baku, which even in itself would be terrible. And I was concerned that they might be experiencing rough treatment when they got there. But they're not going there. They just wanted to cover the tournament. From what you were saying, sorry, all the people that you mentioned, did they eventually manage to get their accreditation?
So Nobel's situation kind of became a bit of a cause célèbre this week, and it was resolved on Thursday. But Mikhail and Konstantin only found out on Friday. So at the moment, Mikhail has gone back to Moscow to commentate on the game from the studio. And Konstantin at the moment doesn't have accreditation for the whole tournament. So I wonder whether this is going to go to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs again. But it's an interesting one. Also, just to mention another conflict, we discussed the Ukraine kit in the preview about the slogans. And part of the slogans, which is glory to the heroes, UEFA ordered Ukraine to cover it up. And it was actually on the back of the shirt, on the inside of the back of the shirt. And I think they're going to put the map and the symbol of Ukraine and glory to Ukraine over it. But Russia complained, and this bit, UEFA actually agreed that should be covered up. So right, a lot of controversy in the former USSR, basically.
Well, yes. Are they going to have to remake all their shirts?
No, I think it's obviously too late to remake the shirts. I think they're going to saw something over them just to cover up the words.
Oh, right. So it's like
the Tour de France employs people to go and paint rude images into nice images on the route. So if someone's drawing a phallus, they'll turn it into a butterfly or something like that. So it's a kind of football shirt version of that, essentially. So.
Right.
Except this is actually on the inside. It's like back on the inside of the collar. But it's been busy off the pitch, and the tournament hasn't even started yet.
Well, it has, of course, in a very real sense.
Yeah.
For some.
Yeah.
For you, Sasha, the tournament hasn't hasn't started yet. Good. Okay. Well, that's a full list of fixtures then for us to be discussing come Saturday evening on Totally Football Show at the Euros. And we're going to be doing that in the company of Daniel Storey and Tom Williams, looking back on Saturday's action and, of course, forward to Sunday's games, which include another England-Croatia at Wembley. Brilliant. That's it, though, for today. So many, many thanks to Sasha Gurionov and to Duncan Alexander and to Ari and James, who joined us earlier on as well. Have a splendid Saturday, everybody, and we'll catch up with you later on.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Head to theathletic.com/totally to find out all the latest subscription offers. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.